Hello, listeners, and welcome to What Happens When I, Andy Fairbanks, a self-titled idea champion, follow my curiosity. I have a habit of surrounding myself with extraordinary people who did not set out to be extraordinary. They're just people like you and me who simply followed their heart's desire and created something wonderful that I find inspiring. I suspect you will, too. I call them everyday extraordinaries, and for 8 weeks, I'm setting out to find out what motivates them to do what they do and how I can help everyday people like you become extraordinaries too. Hello, friends. Here we are in another episode of Everyday Extraordinaries. I have a show that's a little bit different for you today. Every other installment of this 8-episode season has been a chat with a good friend of mine or somebody who I've worked with or known for a significant amount of time. And this week, I have a new connection to share with you, a new friend, and I'm really excited to learn with you about the extraordinary Victoria Buddha. Victoria and I are both part of a solo entrepreneur learning and support group. It's a program run by our friend Michelle Ward, who you heard on an earlier episode. And I've had the pleasure of watching Victoria launch her business and start to get comfy in this new venture of hers, which is called the Being Me Movement. And I know this movement is going to resonate with a lot of my listeners, so I had to have her on. Hello, Victoria.
Hello, thank you for having me.
I'm so excited that you're here. This is fun. I just was, before we started recording, I told her, we are larger than life, my friend.
I like that, especially since I'm 4'11", I like feeling bigger than that.
Yes, we are. We are legends in our own minds. So the thing that I know about you and your business is that one day, I kind of remember this story, you were noodling around with ideas and you wrote in your journal, just being me. And then you crossed out the just, and that kind of stumbled upon this whole big idea. And I want to talk like pre-just and post-just. So what were you doing before that day that you decided to start this movement?
Before that, I was, for the past 13 years, I founded and ran a children and teen theater company in my hometown called Drama Room. Before that, I was in New York City as an actress, and my sister got ill. She's doing great now, but she's 16 months younger than I am, and we were taught that family sticks together, so as soon as she got sick, I needed to come home, and I didn't know what the heck I was going to do in my small town, Oneida. And my mom told me to, she's like, well, why don't you think about starting a children's theater or be a banker?
Those are two great choices. I actually have, the last episode in the series is about another woman in Texas who founded a children's theater. So I should connect you to.
Oh, wow. And I give her a lot of applause. I was like, all right, well, let me try this children's theater since I have an idea at least about something about that. And I put an ad in the paper and we said registration was at 9:00 and we sat there and then, you know, 50 minutes went by and not one person came into the door. And I was like, okay, I guess maybe I have to figure out
what this maybe I need to be a banker.
And what had happened was the paper had misprinted the time and they put 10 a.m. And at 10 a.m., 100 families came through the door.
Whoa.
Yeah. It was insane and amazing. I had no idea what I was doing. And I, you know, basically grew up with my kids. I have, this core group that started with me when they were 9 years old, and now they're 25, 26 years old out in the world, and they've been with me through my whole journey of everything. So that's what I was doing pre-just. Then I turned 40, and I was really lucky to grow up with a mom that also always told me to listen to my gut. It's something that I didn't realize that everybody didn't know how to do.
Yes.
Until recently, I'm like, wow, really? You've never heard this before? So anyway, my gut was telling me that it was time to do something else. So even though I have this amazing theater that my town loved, it wasn't right for me anymore. I was expanding beyond it. And so I took some time. I took a year to just get in tune, not just get in tune, to get in tune with my And I started doing things that was out of my comfort zone that I would never do. And I love doodling and I love drawing. So when I doodled this character with just being me and crossed out the word just, I posted it online because I never show anybody my doodles, my drawings. I'm the director, actor. I'm not the artist, right? So I never show people that stuff, even though I do it every day, all day long. And I got a lot of attention. And I was, oh, okay, something's going on here. And so that's the journey to just.
So how did it kind of evolve from there? So you had this cartoon, you crossed out the just, and then what happened next?
Yeah, well, the reason why I wrote the cartoon in the first place, I am an auntie for my 16-year-old niece, goes to school right up the street from me. So I picked her up one day from school and we were talking, and she's a dancer. So she's eating while she's throwing on her leotards and we're rushing to get to dance. And I love that time in the car with her. It's my favorite. We talk about all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And she was telling me about in English class, her teacher asked everybody what sport they played. And they were all answering soccer, baseball. And when it was her turn, she said, I'm just a dancer. And the teacher was really lovely and kind and said, you know, there's a difference between art and sports. And I wasn't really concerned about what he said. I was more concerned about like what made her say just a dancer when it's almost a full-time job that she's there dancing at the studio. She teaches, she loves dance. And
not just another part of her life. It's part of her life. It is her identity. Wow.
Exactly. Like since she was a baby, you know how some people, when they're really little, know what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. That was Trini. She has been dancing and loving theater and dance and singing and all of that since she was very little. But in particular, dance is something that really lights her up. And so that's why. So I came home and I was journaling and I wrote this, and I also got thinking about the word. I kept seeing a lot like be happy, be you, be kind. And I think those are all really well-intentioned mantras, but it also felt like you were failing all the time if you weren't those things. Like another, like, oh crap, I'm sucking at be you. Oh, how do I be you? But this word being to me felt with like more ease. Like I didn't have to do anything for being.
Right, because it's just a continuation of what you're already doing. It's not not aspirational.
Right. All you have to do is keep choosing to breathe every day, which I think sometimes we forget we actually make that choice to do every day, all day long. And so breathing, being.
It just made me take a deep breath.
Feels like you don't have to be sorry for doing that, and you don't have to have any, right, there's no like end goal to it. It's being. And then I did some research and I looked up the word just because I love research, and I found that, you know, this woman had already done some research that women tend to use this word more than men. And, you know, like a female CEO will say, I just need that report by 5 o'clock. And the male CEO will say, I need that report by 5 o'clock. So this sort of cultural thing where women tend to need to apologize all the time for being direct. And you know, there's two sides to that, but I'm more concerned about what are our own sneaky apologies. Mm. So, you know, my sister's a nurse, and when she's around other nurses, she'll say, I'm a nurse. Well, she'll say she's an LPN. So she'll say, I'm an LPN. But when she's in a group of people that she maybe feels a little inferior to, she'll say, I'm just an LPN. Wow. And so it's those times that I really want to highlight and spotlight. Like, when are you apologizing for what you are and you're not realizing that you're apologizing?
That's so interesting, because I find myself saying a lot that I'm just starting out. I'm just starting out. I'm just figuring it out. And I never thought of that as being apologetic, but it is. You're right. It is. And it's diminishing what we all already have to offer by saying that we're always, you know, we have so much more to do, when of course we all have more to learn and do, but we also have value in right where we are.
Oh, yes. And I love it. When I hear you say I'm starting out, that makes me feel so excited and pumped. I love when people are starting something and the potential of what that can be. And to have that little sneaky like apology in there, it's, yeah. So it's fine when you do it intentionally. You know, sometimes I use the word just on purpose because I know it's going to soften what I'm asking for.
Sure.
So I will use it. But it's the times when you're using it, you know, I'm just taking time to myself. I just feel like that's the one I hear a lot when somebody's having a conversation. I just need, it's okay to need it. It's okay to want it. It's okay to feel it.
Yeah.
So, wow. Yeah. So that's where that, as my whole drama room started actually for my nieces too. So they're big, they play a big role in my life. And, this movement, I really wanted to call her attention to how important what she was doing and that she didn't need to apologize ever for not playing soccer and dancing.
Right.
To herself. It's not, again, it's not about what the other person is perceiving. It's what inside her was making her feel a little bit less than her classmates.
Right. Oh. This is fit, you know, and again, I've been listening to you develop this over the past couple of months, but I'm so excited that I'm getting to hear more about it because it's, you know, just in dribs and drabs and we're all sharing and this is great. So we just practiced this in our group this past week and I'm going to put you on the spot and maybe Michelle's listening and will be very proud of us. what is your mission statement and who do you work with? What's your goal here?
Right. This question really terrifies me, but I'm going to answer it the best I can. Because I have the Being Me movement, which is one thing that I do, but from that I've developed the Being Me program. So my mission for the Being Me program is I work with 20-somethings to help them get unstuck, get away from Netflix, and create that thing that they really want to make. That's what the offshoot of this movement has been, because I found that I stopped getting calls about monologues and theater related things. And I started getting calls that went something like, oh, I really want to write, but I'm working all day long and I don't have the time and I don't feel like myself anymore. And I kept getting them like some version of, I don't feel like myself anymore. And what I realized was they all had this creative thing that they wanted to do, but if it wasn't going to make them money or if it wasn't going to advance their career, they binged on, you know, TV series instead of doing that thing. And I hear a lot of people say like millennials are lazy and entitled, and I have had the exact opposite experience with them. I feel like there are so many choices and they want to heal this world so badly that they get completely paralyzed and stuck and don't know what to do next. So I help them figure out what to do next.
Oh, I just put my hands over my heart like, I'm so touched by that. And I wish that if I was still in my 20s, I would be looking to you for this movement. I'm going to be looking to you for it in my 30s, going into my 40s here, because that's beautiful. And they're so, I have had the same experience with millennials. I actually really bristle when I hear the word millennials, because I think that a negative connotation has been put on it. And it's just the next generation of people, and they have so much to offer. And like I feel like we've put so many expectations on them that they need to rise up and change the world. And they think they have to do something huge rather than just start with themselves, just start with being true to themselves. So I love this. And now that we know what your goals are, can we talk, we're going to shift gears just a little bit and talk about this crazy experience that is being an entrepreneur. So did you always know that you wanted to work for yourself?
Yes. I didn't know the fancy word entrepreneur, but when I look back, I started my own store on my porch. I tried to sell my dog when I was a kid. I made a restaurant. I was always making a business on my house. I would write up contracts for my parents, and I never knew not to do that. All of I never really realized this till recently, but my entire, like, my dad had his own business. My mom had her own business. Both my grandfathers owned their own business, but you never heard the word entrepreneur, right?
Right.
And, so when I went, you know, when I first went into acting, I got great advice to treat myself like a business. So I was my own business owner for that. And then when I did Drama Room, I knew intuitively that I like to create the environment that I'm in. I'm really a stickler about that. I'm huge proponent in being kind to everything, kind to the work, kind to other people, kind to myself. And, so I didn't seek out other theaters to work at. I knew I wanted to build my own thing. So I've always done that. I just didn't know this term entrepreneur until a couple of years ago. That's what I am.
I love the concept of, I'm fascinated by this concept of creating your environment. I'm sure that I've heard something similar to that before, but that it evokes something different in me than creating a business, creating your work. There's creating the environment in which you do your work. So the ambiance, and not just the physical environment. That's fascinating. So now that you're in this and you've had one entrepreneurship, now you're kind of evolving into the next step of this with the Being Me movement. So what challenge do you wish that you could just throw money at and solve right now? So in other words, if you had the resources, what kind of help would you hire?
I love this question. Without a doubt, I would hire the kid that's been helping me. I have one guy's name's Kyle. Hi, Kyle. He's a grad student in biomedical engineering at the University of Rochester. And I know, so I always tell him he's helping people's hearts, literally and figuratively. Mm-hmm. he did all the tech sound and lighting stuff for me when I had my theater company. And when I started this new venture, I'm terrible at tech stuff. I have lots of ideas and it takes me a really long time to learn how to do websiting and all that stuff. So he volunteered his time and my website is beautiful.
It really is.
And he did all that and he spent all of it, you know, in between cramming for all these important tasks. He was helping me develop this movement. And anytime I have ideas for merchandise, I'll give him my idea and he puts it physically on the product.
Right.
Oh, I would hire him in a heartbeat.
Oh, Kyle. Kyle, we love you.
we really do. And the other thing, I really miss working with a team. I like collaborating. So I would love to be in the room with people. So I wouldn't necessarily want to hire virtual assistants, but I would want to hire a team local to me that we could be in the same room together creating and working and making.
Isn't it interesting that seems so, that's not the norm anymore?
Yeah.
Wait, especially for solo entrepreneurs, like we're online. If we have teams, our teams are virtual. The connections that we make are virtuals. I mean, I've never met you in person and I consider you part of my moral support team.
Yeah. It's beautiful. I love that.
Yeah.
I do miss the physical, like being in the room, and there's something I think about, like the energy of your brains connecting and coupling and flowing, and you know, I miss that a lot.
Yeah.
So
I agree that's a great aspirational goal. Would love to have an in-person team. So what has, as you've been moving through creating this movement and watching people connect with it, what's the most pleasant surprise that you've experienced?
I didn't realize I tend to do this. I think that what I know, other people know. So even though this is a very simple concept, I'm not doing, you know, neuroscience or something, I'm always surprised of how big of a change something simple as crossing out the word just can make. That really still, every day somebody will message me and say, oh my goodness, I did a talk recently and this woman came up to me and she was a single mom. And she said, I feel a little bad that I don't have a job and I'm a stay-at-home mom. And I didn't even realize that I feel bad about that. And I'm not going to feel bad about that anymore. Wow. And it was really powerful and a great reminder that even though I've been saying this for a while, because I've been working on this now for about a year, mm-hmm. that there are still so many people that haven't heard it yet. And so to keep saying it, because that person that needs to hear it is out there and hasn't, you know, tuned in yet to it.
Right.
So even though I feel bored of myself sometimes.
There's a great book that I read during my grad school program by Chip and Dan Heath. It's called Made to Stick. And it's the book is basically about, it's a marketing book, really. It's about how to get people to connect with your ideas. But the biggest lesson that I took away from that is the curse of knowledge. And that's what they call it in all capital letters. The curse of knowledge is the phenomenon that happens when you know something and you can't imagine what it was like to not know it.
Ooh, I love this.
Yeah. It's a great book. I'll put it in the show notes for our listeners,
yeah.
But it's a really fascinating book. It also talks about the power of storytelling, which I think is all very connected to what your, what your mission is. But yeah, the curse of knowledge. And I find this, in my own work as well, that I'm like, well, I mean, it's really not that hard to write some words down and stand up in front of people and deliver them. And then I find out that no, that just happens to be something that I'm good at innately. And it's something that I can share with people and help them become better at. But I have to put myself in that mind that no, it's not something that comes naturally to everybody. To some people it does, and to some people it doesn't. So that's, yeah, I highly recommend Made to Stick. Great book, The Curse of Knowledge.
Yeah, and I would even add on to that, that it comes naturally to you, but you've also practiced it for a really long time.
Right, well, that's true. Right? Yeah, no, that's true. And then some things you don't even realize that you've practiced. It's because you've done it so much, and it's been, we used to call it in the karate school, disguised repetition, right? It's just something that has happened in your life over and over again, and you've learned from it, and you just don't even realize that it's happened.
I love that.
Or that there was ever a time that you didn't know how to do it.
Yeah.
So one thing that I've found is that everything has to be so quick in your communications when you're trying to hook people into your business or idea. You have, you know, 30 seconds to give somebody an elevator pitch before their eyes start glassing over. But what is something, if you had people's attention for longer, what's something you wish people knew about you as you're working through this journey that you might not always get to showcase?
I would, I'm terrible, first of all, at the 30-second pitch. I'm getting better, thanks to our coach, Michelle, when I grew up coach. But I really am, because I feel that there's so much I want to share as far as look, for example, with the Being Me program, the members of that have joined me and that, and all of they have produced in the world from working one-on-one with me. I want to, not because I want to highlight myself in that, but I can't believe what they've been able to do in an 8-week program, such a short amount of time. And I think other people's stories help other people. So I would want to share, you know, Justin, who is, he's an engineer, he's a super smart kid, loves music as well. And after 8 weeks, his big goal was to perform at an open mic in Boston that really intimidated him. Only the really great musicians played at. Mm-hmm. And he did, and he won the competition.
Wow.
You know, and since then he toured, he went to South by Southwest with a new band that he found, Strangers by Accident. And, you know, just this amazing stuff. So that I wish people had a little bit more time to hear the real stories.
These people sound like everyday extraordinaries, Victoria.
Oh my gosh. They are the loves of my life, I swear. They're fantastic. You know, Jessica's in New York right now doing children's theater. And when she first moved there after college, she went to school for theater. She always knew that she wanted to work with children, much like she grew up in drama room, and not be a performer. But there really isn't programming for that or any that she found. So with this program, she's a hot commodity right now in New York. She's getting jobs left and right.
Wow.
And it's awesome.
That's a feat to be a hot commodity in New York City.
I know. I'm so proud of her. I mean, and what's really fun about her is it's both of my worlds coming together, you know, watching her teach the same stuff that I taught her at when she was a baby. And then also knowing that she has the best testimonial. She says, I know I'm 100% sure I would have 0% done without this program.
Oh my gosh. I have the biggest smile on my face right now. I would love to watch you work with them. I want to hear all of their stories. I can hear, and I'm sure that my listeners hear too, I hear you light up when you talk about them. Like this is your calling. This is really wonderful work. So what do you envision? And I like to ask these questions for people who are out there kind of thinking about working on their own, trying to figure out what the next step is in their own entrepreneurship. So what do you envision a typical work day will look like if this work continues on the path that you've chosen for it?
I like the way my life looks right now.
You are being you.
And I am. I sure am. But I would love, as I said before, to connect more. So I hope as I progress, I'm getting on a plane and going someplace and meeting up with people. And I want to hear more people's stories and talk to more people. That would be really great. I foresee someday in the future having some sort of summer retreat or something like that. I want to bring all of the people that I work with together, and because their minds are amazing, and collectively it would just be.
Oh, I want to go to the Being Me Summit.
There you go.
Have I aged out of that? I want to go to that. It sounds amazing.
Yeah, I had to up my age. When I had my theater company, it started out 8 to 12-year-olds, and then they kept aging out, and I had to keep increasing. Then it turned to 26-year-olds by the time I was
Wow. Well, I'll tell you, my typical workday vision is similar to yours. And, you know, a lot of what I like to do is put together presentations and events. So, you know, keep me in mind, Victoria. Maybe we'll work together someday and we can be in the same room together.
Oh, I love that.
It would be great. That's, again, something to think about down the road. So what's the next push or the project that you have lined up? What do you want to tell my listeners to go and check out?
Well, if you're in New York, I'm in New York State, and I'm going to be at Seneca Falls on July 16th at the Women's Rights Museum. It's their convention. And I'll be speaking about the movement there, which I'm super excited about. It's a really great little quaint little town. And I also have a new program starting in June. That's a little smaller than the 8-week. It's a 6-week summer slam sesh. So if anybody's interested in that, but really I would love everybody to go over to that beautiful website. It's a big website. There's a lot to see and a lot to go through. I have ambassadors that are the Being Me Movement ambassadors, and they've all recorded videos, and I would love for people to listen to their stories, and they're really great people, and I think they should be heard, the message that they're saying. So,
and that website is beingmemovement.com, correct?
Yep, beingmemovement.com, and we have a store over there. So if you're looking to spread the message on, you know, some inspirational merchandise, we have all sorts of things, hats and cups and shirts and sweatshirts, and It's really a fun space.
I love the swag.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff. Okay, well, we now get to do our end of show tradition, and I hope you're excited about it because I love this part.
Yes.
So you've just won a major award for your work with the Being Me movement, and we want to hear your Oscar speech. And go.
Woohoo! I love winning. And I would have to thank everyone that has ever loved me, that was not legally required to do so, and those that were also legally required to do so. Anybody that's ever made me laugh, anybody that's ever created with me or been my audience, or anybody that's ever done anything to blow my mind. I would have to thank my drama room babies and my sisters. I love being one of four sisters, and it's shaped me to who I am. I also, of course, have to thank Kevin, who's my best friend, who makes all this possible, and Kyle, who we love already.
Yay,
and,
Kyle.
And, you know, honestly, my parents, I was really lucky to have a dad that told me when I was really little that he said to me, if you don't vote for yourself, who do you expect to vote for you? Oh. And he also, he used to tap my head and call me his genius. And as a little girl, I can't thank him enough for saying that to me. And my mom, who taught me to trust my own intuition and my gut, and she's like my spiritual guru. And you know, basically I had two parents that taught me since I was very young the power of being me. So thank you.
Thank you, Victoria. That was a great speech. I'm so excited that we did this. This was kind of a last, we were talking in our group and Victoria said, I should try to be a guest on somebody's podcast. And I was like, I have a podcast.
Yay.
And here we are. And I'm so glad that we did it because I've been so intrigued by your work as we have been working together since, was it January or February or whenever it's been. And I'm so excited that I got to really listen to you talk about your passion because, as I suspected, it's a movement that I certainly can get behind, and I'm really excited to see what happens next for you.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. So that is a wrap on this episode of Everyday Extraordinaries. And if you'd like to know more about Victoria and the Being Me movement, I hope you'll visit beingmemovement.com. Sign up for her newsletter. Check out all of her really fantastic products. Like she said, she's got some great videos on there from her ambassador group, and she's got a lot of merchandise, and it's just really cute stuff. So go check it out. And if you want to know more about me and the creative communications work that I do, please visit andyfairbanks.com and check out my blog. We've got more episodes of Everyday Extraordinaries and some other fun stuff there to check out as well. And we will see you around podcast land. Everyday Extraordinaries is written and produced by me, Andy Fairbanks. Music is licensed through Audio Jungle. If you loved the show, I'd be so honored if you'd give it a little review in iTunes to let others know to tune in. Thanks for listening. I hope you have an extraordinary day.